So we're getting to the end of Sefer Bereishit. And it would be nice if this, you know, we end the book and everyone lives happily ever after, because that's the way that books are supposed to end. I'm not completely convinced that that's what happens. So let's go towards the last, really, the last couple of scenes. And we'll start with source number one, which is Bereishit, chapter 50, Pasuk Yudalad, Perek Nun, Pasuk Yudalad, verse 14. Vayashav Yosef Mitzrayma, hu ve'echav, v'chol ha'olim ito, l'kbor et aviv, acharei kavro et aviv. And Yosef returns to Egypt, he and his brothers and all who went up with him to bury his father, after his father was buried. Now, of course, in our fantasy, when we write the alternative ending of the book, we would like to say that Yaakov dies, they all get back to Israel and say, okay, to Paro, you know, take care, it's been good, it's been fun, and now we're back home. But it doesn't happen that way. Instead, after the funeral of Yaakov, they all return back. And that verse itself, you know, when we read it, knowing that there's going to be another book, say, for Shemot, and knowing in this book that we're going to have untold tales of suffering and of slavery and so on, so we realize that this verse, returning to Egypt, is one which is really very bittersweet. But for the brothers, it was more than bittersweet, because something happened. There is a shift, and the shift can have multiple reasons for it, or it could have different explanations for it, where it may have been something which was always under the surface and now it comes up, or it could have been something which was always there in potential and something which had prevented it had existed till now, or it could be that something new arises. And I'm not trying to be mysterious, but let's read and see what it says. V'yir'u achei Yosef, and the brothers of Yosef see, and that, you notice, I bolded the v'yir'u, they see something. They see kimet aviyim, that their father is dead. Now, of course, they saw their father is dead, because that's why they buried him. Otherwise, they would not have buried him, presumably. Presumably. V'yir'u achei Yosef kimet aviyim, v'yomru, and they said, lu yistamenu Yosef. Now, the difficult word in this phrase is actually Lou. I know Lou normally is the name of a middle-aged Jew, but over here, what Lou may mean is really quite debatable, so I'm not sure how to translate it. When we're not sure how to translate it, then we simply defer to, yeah, what does your English say? Vayomer lu yistamen Yosef, verse 15. Perhaps Yosef hates us. Is that how it translates it? 15? Perhaps. So they translated, good. They translated lu as perhaps. Lu yistamenu Yosef. Perhaps Yosef hates us, and therefore what's going to happen now that Yosef hates us? Vahashev Yoshev lanu, and he's going to pay us back. By the way, it's good. Not hashiv lanu, hashev yashiv lanu. You see this this emphasis, pay us back in spades. He's going to pay us back. Et kol hara'a ashagamalnu oto. All of the evil which we have caused him. Now, what is it that caused this response? Again, it says they see their father is dead. So, again, we'll just speak logically for a moment. Could it be that while their father is alive, they think Yosef is afraid? Again, we've seen a model like this already. Who would represent that model? Esav. Even Esav says, wait for my father to be dead, and then I'm going to get Yaakov. So over here, we would have this parallel between, in their perception, by the way, that itself is very, it's very, very frightening, that in their perception, Yosef is basically Esav, Yaakov is dead, and now he's going to get us back. By the way, what exactly he's going to do to them is not clear yet, but we'll see as we continue. Let's before we guess. Let's just Let's just read the words first. It says that Yosef, and by the way, it's interesting, Lu yistameini Yosef, which means they're saying perhaps Yosef hates us. Now, perhaps Yosef hates us, generally, you get a pretty good feeling when somebody likes you, when somebody doesn't like you. So now, what are they accusing Yosef of? They're accusing that all of the smiles and all of the family get-togethers and all of the barbecues that have taken place till now have all been a lie. Everything's been a lie, because in Yosef's heart, he hates us. Which means this verse, again, is really a tragic verse. It means after everything else, after the reconciliation, after everything is said and done, Yaakov is removed from the scene, and they, again, it says they see that Yaakov is dead. So we'll start looking at the commentaries, how they translate or understand this idea of what it is that they see. But let's just read a little bit more still. And they say he's going to pay us back for the evil that we caused him. Tet Zayin, Vayetzavu El Yosef. Now that's also quite strange. They commanded Yosef. Now, what position are they in to command Yosef? In terms of the relative political power over here, Yosef is in a much stronger position. So therefore, this term is strange. Vayetzavu El Yosef, which is also strange, it should have been Vayetzavu Et Yosef. So what does this mean, Vayetzavu El Yosef? So over here also, there is need for interpretation. Lemor saying, Avicha tziva, your father commanded, lefnei moto lemor, before he died, saying. Now, there's one of two possibilities. One possibility is that Yosef is aware of this, and the other possibility, he's not aware of this. This is now, in the possibility that Yosef isn't aware of this, there's again two possibilities. One possibility, he's not aware of it because Yaakov didn't want to say it to Yosef to embarrass him, or the other possibility is that Yaakov never said it. Now, the possibility that Yaakov never said it may be disturbing to some of you, but then, basically, I don't know any other way to say it, the brothers lie to Yosef and say that Vayetzaveil Yosef, they command him, saying, Avicha tziva, your father commanded. Now, look, obviously, if Yaakov had said it to Yosef, then it would be maybe, perhaps, it would be easier to use the word they commanded to Yosef. What are they doing? They're relaying the their father's last will and saying, listen, this is what your father said to you. We're just really reminding you, even though there perhaps would have been an easier way to say that.
It's strange here because they've been in the footnotes.
Don't look in the footnotes.
No, I'm just saying, they say this was not true. I mean, right, they're just saying that based on Rashi. They're just saying this was not true.
Does that bother you?
Yeah,
okay, so did I? So
I mean,
you shouldn't be talking to me. I presented multiple possibilities.
I know.
You should write a letter to the editor, or maybe rip out that page. Okay. So, yes. Again, what Art School does is that they'll take Rashi's translation and then read it back into the text. I'm pointing out that there are other possibilities over here, and especially in light of that first Vayetzavu, it makes it perhaps in a different direction, that they are relaying over a command that already had existed. Continue. And this is the message. Ko tomar li Yosef, anasana peshachecha v'chatatam, ki rog melucha, v'tasana lefesh avdei elokei avicha. And basically saying, without translating every word, the command is, forgive them. Forgive them from their sin. Forgive them what they've done. Forgive the servants of God and the servants. Avdei Elokei Avicha, the servants of God of your father, basically saying, listen, you got to stick together. These are your brothers. They didn't treat you like a brother. These are the sons of your father. Treat them as your father would want. Treat them in an appropriate fashion. And Yosef's response is, he's already done this many times in the text. But Yosef Yosef cries when he says this. Does he cry? Again, you guys get to be the movie director over here. Does he cry because they knew what he was thinking, right? Which makes it all that much more sinister. Mm-hmm. Or does he cry because how could you possibly accuse me of this? How after all these years of me taking care of you and caring for you and being involved with you, how could it possibly be right now that you're accusing me of such treachery that you can accuse me of wanting to take vengeance against you? Now, again, let's remember something. If Yosef wanted to take vengeance against his brothers, he could have. right? I mean, if you go back to the very beginning, the first thing is they see him coming and they say, let's kill him. Yosef's response could have been, and maybe another man would have behaved this way, sees his brothers coming and says, you know what, I think I'm going to kill them. I mean, right there, that's what they plotted, that could be his response. Instead, they don't kill him, but they sell him off as a slave. So his response could be, you know what, maybe I won't kill you, I'll send you off as a slave. And you can also debate with me whether he actually ever knew that they had plotted to kill him or not. Could be that he never knew that. Could be that all that he knew is that he was sold off as a slave. Unless you want to start with the Rashbam, which makes no sense whatsoever, who claims that Yosef didn't, that the brothers didn't sell Yosef at all, but I'm not going to go there at all. Yes? He says it, right? He says it black and white, right? That's why I said the Rashbam doesn't make any sense. He says, when he wants to make up with them, don't feel bad that you sold me. So he knows that they sold him. I'm saying whether he knows or not that they threatened, that they contemplated killing him, that I'm saying is something which is a bit more debatable. Although you could say, especially according to Chazal, that when they throw him into the pit, what did Chazal say? It says a pit, right, a bor reik ein bo mayim, that there was no water inside, but nechashim v'akrovim. There are scorpions and snakes. That sounds good. There are scorpions and snake in there, which would be that it was that throwing him into the pit was itself a dangerous situation, which of course is a little funny because Reuven does this to save him, but to put him in a precarious situation. So apparently Reuven feels better to put him with scorpions and snakes than to leave him with his brothers, because apparently they're worse than scorpions and snakes. And again, that seems to be... And by the way, there is a deeper point to this. The deeper point is that people have free will. And therefore, people's free will, they can act and God perhaps, I don't know how to say this, but I'll say it like this. God doesn't want the person dead, but this person has free will. So therefore, this person does free will and therefore causes something which I would say God doesn't prefer. What I'm really touching right now is part of a much larger issue, which I am not going to get into, is the issue of why bad things happen in a world where we have free choice. So if you want to prevent bad things from happening, take away free choice. But it could be that when it comes to the animal kingdom, that they don't exactly have free choice. They do have instinct, but they don't exactly have free choice. So it could be that if you want to analyze Reuven on a deeper theological level, that he says, let me take him away from these people who have free choice and jealousy and hatred and so on, and let me instead put him in a situation where there are only animals who act on instinct, but therefore it's not their free choice. And maybe there will be more divine protection when you're only dealing with animals and not or creatures and you're not dealing with human beings. So I'm just saying is that there is room to go in that direction. But it is interesting, and I don't want to miss the really significant subtext of the entire story. When the brothers see him, there is one thing that they say. Here comes the... Right. They don't say, here comes the brat. Here comes the malshin, the one who tells on us. Here comes the father's favorite child. What do they say? Here comes the dreamer of dreams. Let us kill him, and then we'll see what will be of the dreams. Which means the dreams are the thing, to paraphrase Shakespeare. On the other hand, when Yosef sees his brothers, what does it say there? It says, and he remembers, does it say he remembers the sale? Does it remember throwing in the pit? What does it say? It says he remembers the dreams. Which means the dreams really are the subtext to the entire story, and that's something that we should not let elude us. I didn't say outrageous. I said sad. I didn't say unbelievable. I said tragic. Right. That we discussed a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
But there's something else. There's psychological projection.
Yes.
If they're still feeling guilty.
Good.
They see hatred in them.
Right. No, and it will be interesting as we see some of the commentaries, especially 19th and 20th century, who are very sensitive to the more psychological issues and see issues of projection. So we'll see some of that soon.
Kind of people and things like that. Those people, when they're in a situation, they project what they would be doing in that situation. That's
right.
Where it comes from.
Correct.
It's not a question of thinking that it's like, hey, I would be doing this. It's
But still, it's sad. As I said, we would like it to end a happy ending to the book. And unfortunately, the happy ending seems to elude us. In Pasuk Yuted is Yosef's response, V'yomer lehem Yosef, Al tira'u, Yosef says, do not be afraid, ki atachad elokim ani, am I in the place of God? Which is also a very chilling response. It's not a response that I have forgiven you and therefore there's nothing to think about. God will judge you. God will judge. Listen to what he says and what he doesn't say. So this is also quite interesting. V'atem chashavtem alai ra'ah. But you may have thought that what you were doing was going to be bad to me. Elokim chashava l'tova. God turned it around, and what's the Yiddish saying? The mensch tracht, and the Eibishter lacht. That's really what he says over here. Those of you who need a translation, go ahead. Trachs. Trachs is... So, in a sense, that's what Yosef said. You had a plan, to destroy me, and God had a different plan. That God's plan not only didn't cause my death, but it caused an incredible, nation, which is now emerging, to be able to be sustained. But have I offered any commentary yet? I'm just reading the words. Va'ata al tira'u, and do not be afraid. Anochi achakel etchem. I will provide you with sustenance. Ve'et tabchem, and for your animals. Ve'yinichem otam, and he comforted them. Et tabchem, children. Ve'yinichem otam, and I will. and he comforted them. V'yidaber al libam, and now it says he spoke to their heart. V'yeshev Yosef b'Mitzrayim, and Yosef settled in Egypt, which is very similar to V'yeshev Yaakov. V'yeshev Yosef b'Mitzrayim, hu uveit aviv, he and the household of his father. V'yechi Yosef meiv esrim shana, Yosef 110 years. Yosef dies and is put in a box in Egypt. And then we've come to the end. Chazak, chazak, v'nitz chazek. Throw the candies down. Mazel tov, good. Okay. Just having flashbacks. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Today is my birthday. So I'm born on a fast, every year I'm born on a fast day. Oh, I would have gotten you a cake, but it's a birthday. But it's a fast day. I'm sorry. Okay, so, right. Maybe next year. Oh, next year again. So, he's born on syrup potatoes. Yeah. Every year. Okay. So my mother had to say it, so you should. I was going to call her up at 12:01 on the English birthday. My wife said, no, that's not a good idea. So I said, say thank you. Okay. So thank you. Okay. So let's take a look. Let's start with the Al Sheikh in source number 2. The Al Sheikh is bothered by Vayir'u Achei Yosef. They noticed. They saw something. Al Sheikh writes, Hinei Re'iyazu Bilti Muvenet. It's incomprehensible. What did they see? Ki Eichim Re'u V'loz Lota. What are they seeing? Again, what bothers him is Vayurach Yosef Kimet Avihim. They see that their father is dead, and they say, Yosef is going to hate us now. And then he explains, Al-Sheikh Jenny sets out 4, 5, 6 questions, and then he answers them all. The Al-Sheikh, the Abarbanel, a couple of other commentaries, that's their modus of interpretation, where they will lay out a bunch of questions. Then in 3, he gets to his answer. But I want to read the verse again, so you'll see where it is that he's getting it from. Vayashav Yosef Mitzrayim. Yosef returns from Egypt. Hu ve'echav. He and his brothers. So the Al-Sheikh explains in 3, Sha'omer, Vayashav Yosef Mitzrayim Ahu Ve'achav Ki Milat Hu Miyuteret. The word he is unnecessary. Ach Kevin Shelo Ba B'chevra Itam. He did not accompany them. Raku Levado Behem Levadam. He was alone and they were alone. Al Kain Vayiruche Achiv Ki Met Aviyam Kiru Horat Rosh Mitato. Now they saw the result of the death, which means that Yosef really had been friendly with them the whole time that the father is alive. But now, when it comes for the travel plans on the way back, once their father is dead, suddenly they find that he's not on the same plane with them, he's not on the same carriage with them, that he has left them behind, abandoned them, and he's traveled separately. So he sees that from the word who over here, and that's his suggestion to what does it mean that now they see their father is dead, that subsequent to the funeral, they see that Yosef has changed.
He reads that it's Yosef's initiative, like that Yosef separates from the brothers and not that he,
He reads that they see... Right? He...
I don't belong here.
Good.
I'm better than you. I'm real royal and you guys are
right.
Common people. You know,
fact. Fact and interpretation. Fact, that he is putting forth, is that Yosef is not with them. Interpretation, things have changed. So that they see this as being ominous. So that's where he's seeing it in the text. So again, apparently, during Yaakov's life, it was different. Could be. It's not how I understand it. Look at Rashi, how Rashi deals with it. They see that their father is dead. Mahu vayiru. What do they see? Hikiru b'mita toei tzil Yosef. Shehoyu regilim lesod imo al shulchano she Yosef. V'hoyu mikarvan b'shvil kvod aviv. U'mishemet Yaakov lo kirvan. And this, by the way, is not open to as much interpretation. Rashi says that as long as Yaakov was alive, he would invite them, he would sit with them, he would have them over out of honor for his father. Once his father was dead, he had no reason to invite them over anymore. Okay? So again, Rashi over here is very clear that Yosef's attitude has changed, and that's what they... Good. And that would be a weakness in Rashi. Excellent. Because again, the verse saying, well, let's just say, Vayoshev Yosef Mitzrayma, so now he's already back, and now once they're back, that's how Rashi would interpret Yudalit and Tedvav. And they see that something is different. Correct. Now, there is a midrash which has been utilized by multiple commentaries, and it's found in multiple midrashim with nuanced difference, which are significant. Those of you, two of you, who heard me speak in shul a couple of weeks ago, I did quote this in Parsha Miketz. We'll look at the way it's quoted in the Psikta, source 5. Vayiru achei Yosef ki met avihem, ma ra'u, Ella ba'aliyatam el Eretz Yisrael, when they went up for the funeral, nata Yosef min haderech, Yosef went off the path, v'halach and he went, v'tzafani looked, bibor sheshlichu echav. He goes and he takes a look at the pit where they threw him into. Amru, they say, adayin hasina bilibo. And they say, he still hates us. Now, again, the slight challenge over here is geographically. I had a whole discussion about ancient travel routes with my father after I quoted this midrash, because the funeral takes place in Hebron. They're coming from Egypt. They go up to Hebron. I would assume the way you travel would be Derech Eretz Plishtim, right? Which would come up the coast, cut past Beersheva to Hebron, and then I think that would be the quickest way. Excuse me? And you would not get anywhere near the boar. The boar is by Dotan. Dotan is further north from Shechem. if you need just a more or less where it is, it's pretty close to Jenin. Okay, just if you need, what? Okay, okay, but again, I just want to understand it. First of all, my point is that even if you're pointing out this is a medrash, but still, it means that it's not that on the way that you just happen to, you know, to turn off. This means another day's travel north. Now, my father claimed that there was a Derech HaMelech, which would have been easier for chariots to travel down, which would basically be coming down the whole coast, which means not to travel through the mountains. And so therefore, he wanted to say that maybe it would make sense nonetheless of going a little bit north to be able to get on the highway and then to come down south. But I'll leave this up to you. You would go up 60 all the way to Jenin, and then from more or less from Megiddo, you would cut over, because that Megiddo was the place which was the, you know, the big exchange. I understand, but he's saying you'd go further north to be able to get the coastal road back down, and that way you avoid the rest of the mountains for part of the trip. But it seems to me a little out of the way. So I actually was working and looking through atlases, and no, the atlases, to be able, they do have travel routes in another way. Megiddo was the major intersection of travel going from Egypt all the way up through Syria and beyond. So Megiddo is really the major place. Okay. So anyway, anybody who wants to do further research on this, you're invited. We've already spent more time than we should have. Take a look at how the Midrash is mentioned in source number 6. Seichel Tov, Vayomer lo yistameinu Yosef. So again, this is focusing on, oh, perhaps Yosef hates us. Why do they think he hates us? Ma ra'u, which goes back to the beginning. What did they see? Ma ra'u la merkach, ele b'chaziratan michevron, hayu ovrim derech shem ledotan. So again, you realize the difficulty in geography. Nata Yosef mi'al merkavato, v'itzitz bibur sheheshlichu bo'echav, v'nit anach. What does nit anach mean? He kvetched. If he spoke Yiddish, he would have krechts. Krechts, right. He would have given a krechts. What did he... He gives a sigh. He looked, and it's this action that the brothers, Kishero Echavitzos Amru, Adain Hasitma, I think it should be Sitna, Bilibo, that he still hates us. The Chizkuni, the Hadar Zakenim, and others all are very attracted to this Midrash. We'll look at the Chizkuni in source number 7. Now this part does exist in other Midrashim. He makes a bracha when he's there. What? He makes a bracha when he's there. Which means this was the, again, according to, as I said, this is the Midrash which the commentaries, again, are very enamored with. The action that Yosef did in order to cause them to think, or again, to resuscitate all the memories and the hatred. Right. Correct. So we'll hold on. I'll come back to that in a second. Presumably, the way the Chizkuni understands it, and I admit there's more than one way to understand it. Presumably, the way the Chizkuni understands it is that he's saying is that there are nechashim, there are hakovim. He looks inside. He goes, you know, there was a miracle happened over here. I was not killed in this place. This is a place that a miracle took place. I could have been killed. Again, not necessarily knowing that they were preferable to his brothers. The Hadar Zakenim, which is also from the school of Tosfot, they see it. Elish Chazru Yosef Echav Mikvurat Avim Ra Yosef Habur Shu Shlachbo Ubereich Baruch Hashem Ashasali Nisim Makom Zeh VaOmr Echav Me'achashem Askir B'Devazer Adayin Lo Yatzas Sin Ato Milibo. Amru lo yistameni Yosef shema hasinat muna belibo. Volkein meid hakrav. Yiruach Yosef ki meit avim shekol zman shavim kayam lo ratza lisanam vayamechabdam velo iskir lehem ara shasalo mishum kvod avim. Which is actually similar to Rashi, right? But instead of being around the table, he's also saying the whole time that the father's alive, out of honor for the father, he never brought up the sale, which is also interesting because there's another issue here that I didn't raise, which, we're not going to get into that much, but I just want to raise the thought. Does Yaakov ever know about the sale of Yosef? Does Yaakov ever find out how it was that Yosef ended up in Egypt? And the answer is there's no evidence in the Torah except for one verse. And the one verse is when the brothers say, Yaakov said that you should not pay them back for everything he did. And we already raised the possibility that you wanted to rip out of your book that maybe they were lying when they said this. And if they're lying, then maybe Yaakov never knew about it. So it could be that Yosef, for his part, never tells his father, out of honor for his brothers and honors for his father, never told his father how it was he got to Egypt and just let his father assume that along the way he got kidnapped and he got down there, and he could have said that. He could have said, who brought me down here? The Ishmaelim, the Midianim, completely truthful. He didn't have to tell that other piece of information. So I'm saying we do not know whether Yaakov ever knew about the sale. The only verse, as far as I know, the only verse that indicates that Yaakov did have knowledge of it is this verse when Yaakov says to the brother, where Yaakov is quoted by the brothers of having said, do not pay him back for what they did to you. And then now again I want to raise that possibility. Is this a truthful statement or not a truthful statement? Because if it's not a truthful statement, it could very well, and again, let's read the Hadar Zakenim again. He's saying that out of honor for his father, he never brought up what the brothers did. Which means it's possible that Yosef never told Yaakov how he got to Egypt because he thought that would devastate his father. And now, again, according to this interpretation, he learns that they told him what happened because they're scared, because, again, they never trust him. Because, again, it has to be, or I'll go the other way around. They never told Yaakov either, and Yaakov never knew about it. And now they're lying. And why are they lying now? They're lying because now they're scared. So now they're claiming that they told him, and that's Yaakov's response. But either way, this entire issue was placed aside and apparently was not necessarily ever discussed openly. So I'm saying that also, as I said, raises all kinds of other thoughts, but that's significant, yeah.
So the point of all
this is that... I won't respond to any sentence. Perhaps. So, perhaps. You think, with 25 minutes left, I'm going to say what the point of all this is? Immediate gratification. Since when do I provide such things? Please. Now, you know what? I may not even end it today. I don't know. I don't know. That's right. You think what I know we're not going to talk about next week? Yeah. Correct. There are hints. As I said, there's no place clearly where we have reference to it. Okay. Rav Hirsch, which now takes us to which century? Yeah, so reverse takes us into the 19th century. Go where it's underlined in source number 9. Ha'achim ra'u, source number 9. Ha'achim ra'u, the brothers saw, so he right away changes ra'u to hirgishu. What does hirgishu mean? They felt. Shehaviyam einenu, that their father is no longer alive. Adam sha'asa avil l'chavero, here's your projection, a person who does something really wrong, how would you translate avil?
Evil.
Even Adam shasa avel lechaveiro, v'hala eino masbir lo panim biyichud, harei hakarat ashmato tavi enu lamin ki yesh belibo alav. Basically saying that we have no closure, we still have attention over here, and there is absolutely no resolution, as again, at least as of this point, but he's saying it is projection on their part. Right. The Orach Chaim. Orach Chaim gives us a whole other look as to what the word Lu Yistamenu means. Lu Yistamenu, remember, how do we translate till now? Perhaps. Pirish Dilma, Lu is Dilma, perhaps. Ela She'en Chaver La B'Kol Torah. He says that it's not used any other times. Actually, the word Lu is used in other places in the Torah. There are a couple of phrases, but he has difficulty with this. He says, "Venira." He writes, "Venira," which is underlined later on. Correct, Lu Yishmael. Correct, "Venira ki ekatuv divrei atzmo ka'amar lo v'kavana b'ze shehim yiru al davar shehalavai shiyekain." That he understands the Lu as halavai. If only Yosef would hate us. Lu Yistameini Yosef. If only Yosef would hate us. Which just now flipped everything on its head. They wanted their punishment already. I mean, sometimes a person could do something wrong, and it's better to face it than to have it hovering over them. And on top of everything else, they're about to start an exile. Again, they have a tradition of the 400 years of the slavery, which is going to happen. Why have the slavery situation compounded by the Yosef situation? And essentially they're saying, Luis Domeno Yosef, no, let's get this over with. Because again, if God is going to be punishing them, let Yosef get it. Meaning, what does Yosef respond? Again, it's actually working with his response. He doesn't say it, but it's working with the response. What's Yosef's response? It's God to do it. But what do they want? So if Yosef is responding, it's God's problem, not my problem. What do they really want? They want Yosef to do it. Meaning, if Yosef takes revenge on them, so then they're clear. But if Yosef doesn't take revenge on them, so then it gets compounded and figured into the sentencing in terms of the 400 years, which then becomes a little bit more severe. So as I said, that then becomes a completely, completely different read on the entire situation, and they're saying, Halavai, if only Yosef were to hate us, and treat us with more, terribly, then we would get over this particular problem. Rav Hirsch in source 12 writes, Lu Yistameinu Mishpat Hypoteti. Those of you who don't recognize the Hebrew. So they say, Lu, perhaps, again, as a maybe, he's also setting this up as a hypothetical. Look at the Malbim. And again, the Malbim is also 19th century, so that's why it's interesting to see the psychological observations of the, especially 19th century. Look at the Malbim, 13. But Yom Lu Yistameinu Yosef, perhaps Yosef hates us. Far bi'arti b'sefer artzot ha-shalom, ha-shekatav ha-chacham, im ra'av sonacha, if your enemy causes you to starve, ha'alichuhu lechem, then give him bread. Im ra'av sonacha, ha'chilu lechem, give him bread, shehanikama ha-yoter gdola, mol oivei,
Yosef
V'tovat Yosef haya b'neim ki chuta gachalim arosham. It was like Yosef's niceness to them was like burning coals on their heads. What he's saying is that when you do something really painful to somebody else and their response is to smile and to treat you nicely, that's more painful than anything else. And he says Yosef's niceness to them is what really got to them. V'amru halavai, acha sheYosef yistameinu bevadai, v'mkein lo yeshiv lanu tzkol l'ra'a shegamalnu oto, sheyaseim onu ra befoa lo tov shehu lanu kimidakrot cherev. That the niceness that Yosef was doing to them is what was really bothering them. There are a number of midrashim which deal with the point, which again, I don't want to get into so much, but we touched it. The word siva that they commanded him, Rashi understands it was b'nei bilha. Rashi also understands in source 14, avichat siva, shinui b'davar b'nei ha-shalom, they lied. Yaakov had never said it. That's Rashi's conclusion. There are midrashim that indicate that it wasn't even b'nei bilha, but rather it was bilha. And that's interesting because maybe she's the only one who can still tell Yosef what to do. And again, in the whole, assuming that she's still alive, she would be the only one in the whole family who would be in a position to tell Yosef what to do because basically she raised him. So as I said, the Midrashim say Bilha, and Rashi over here prefers to say B'nai Bilha because they perhaps have a closer relationship, and that's something which we also discussed previously. The Datz Kanim also... Excuse me? Maybe that's probably where Rashi goes back to... Right. Datz Kanim also points out, commanded Yosef, uv'chayavim lama lo tzivo, ela amru ma lanu la'orer ha-sin'ah shirei kfar shechacha. V'olcha la'kevin shechazrum l'kvar avim v'avra Yosef ela bor. So he combines the two issues together. Meaning, Yaakov had commanded it. They never wanted to bring it up. But now when they see that he went back to the thing, so now they think it's a good time to bring this up. Yeah.
It could also be that he's saying the bracha and the misim, not just that he was saved from the war, but the whole continuation that he got to Egypt and he was able to save them all from the
fire. Okay, good. I'll get back to that in a second. Surely also look at 18 and the way that it says Bilha, v'yitzaveyo Yosef lemor, omru tzivu lebilha. Lemor lo liyosef. They commanded to Bilha to say it. So I think it does deal with your problem. Let's skip a little bit. Let's look at the source 24. The Chtam Sofer. Re'iti b'seif ma'aseh Hashem, shekatav v'yiru kimet avim, shehigishu b'atchalat shiabud Mitzrayim, achar mot avim, v'omru lo, v'halavai yistamein Yosef b'chet'enu lo, v'lo nimsar b'yad Mitzrayim. What's he saying? Yeah, right. Halavai yistamein Yosef b'chetenu v'lonim tzar b'yad Mitzrayim. So let's just think about this a little bit. Yosef is in his brother's hands. His brothers want to kill him. They then say, again, Yehuda leads the way, why kill him? Let's sell him. And they sell him. So then he becomes a slave to Potiphar. And as things are developed, they're saying, let us be a slave to Yosef and let him not give us over to the Egyptians. Actually, what do the brothers respond and they say to him? Let us be your slaves. They say this to him. Let us be your slaves. So that's what it is. Let us be your slaves, but really don't do to us exactly what we did to you. Which means if we're already going to be slaves, let us be slaves to you rather than be slaves to the to the Egyptians. And therefore they say to Yosef, let us be your slaves. L'chaper al chateinu, in order to receive forgiveness. So there's your closure, if you want. In order for us to receive forgiveness for our sins. V'lo nafla b'yad Mitzrayim. But don't, basically they're saying, don't do to us what we did to you. But don't give us to Egypt. V'yosef yishir lehem. And what's Yosef's response? Anochi achakel etchem. I'll give you food. U'v'mesh etem smuchim al shulchan acherim, u'mitparnesim miyadei, yesh bo dei kippur al chatechem. The fact that I am supporting you and that you're not independent, that itself is kapara. Because what he's saying is, for an individual not to have a lack of independence, for an individual have to rely on somebody else for sustenance, Yosef's response, again, they're saying, let us be your slaves. And Yosef says, I'll support you. He's understanding that Yosef's response is, and that counts as slavery, and that will be your forgiveness. Which means, again, ultimately, I mentioned this last week on Shabbos. I mentioned it by Sheva Brachos. I mentioned that Yosef ends up supporting his brothers for how many years? From the age of 40 to 110. Right? 70 years, Yosef ends up supporting his brothers. So after I said this in Dvar Torah, my mechutu, my son's brand new father-in-law, who's a lawyer, so he had to protest. He says, in law, if you don't respond, then it's as if you accepted what was said. He goes, I'm not accepting to support them for 70 years. So I asked him afterwards, is this an ideological position or is this an economic position? Is it that you don't have enough money to support them for 70 years? Because that we can solve, perhaps. I said, then I'm willing to give you a bracha that you should have enough money to support it. But if this is an ideological position, so then you don't get the bracha. So he said it was ideological. But he said no, it's an ideological position. But he's correct. He's correct because people need independence, and people to have independence is liberating, and to have to rely on somebody else for sustenance is right. So again. This is what Yosef is saying according to the Chatam Sofer. His response is, no, the fact that you are relying on me and have a lack of independence, you can use this in finance or no? You can't do anything with this. Okay. I understand, but it was interesting that he was concerned. Yeah. The question is when does this, excuse me? Yeah, but he's still a part of it. Look at the Abarbanel, source 25, and you'll see here the foundation of some of the later comments that we saw. He's also bothered by the Lu Yistamenu. Halavai. He also goes in that direction. Halavai. Right? If only. Kinitchanin lefanav av biyot hasina nisteret bilibo huyotera. Because they felt that he hated them in the heart, so it's better let it out. Meaning, let it rather than it be hidden. Wrote Salome v'halavai sheyashav yashiv lanu et kol hara'a shegamalnu oto. Now what he says over here is absolutely fascinating. And it ties in with something which one source that I skipped earlier, the Balat Torim, and I also heard you say this, a couple people already had said this in on an undertone. Ultimately, when Yosef goes, okay, ultimately Yosef being sold, in terms of your writing Yosef's biography, was this a good thing or was this a bad thing? Well, at the moment, it's certainly not a wonderful thing. But ultimately, if you're going to have to look back on Yosef's life and say, you know, how did Yosef become the man that he became? And because he went down to Egypt. And that's why when he goes over the pit and he says, Baruch Shasali Nes B'Makom Hazeh, one possibility is that he says that because he was saved right there from the Nechashim HaKrovim, which, by the way, are not necessarily part of the text. The other possibility is that he recognizes that because this is the place that his life turned around, that because of being thrown in the pit, that's how he ends up becoming. So therefore, Shasi Nes Makom Hazeh, what's he making the bracha on? It could be that he's making the bracha on the entire transformation that has taken place in his life, and not merely that he got saved from the pit. And this is Yosef's realization, that he wouldn't be in the royal house and the royal chariot and royal clothes had it not been for what happened by that pit. And that, by the way, is a true and accurate portrayal of Yosef's life. Again, you write the biography, you'd have to say, it's also very good musar, what in context looked to be the most devastating moment of his life, later on becomes the opportunity to become the man that he became. Okay, so as I said, that there is an incredible message in that. Now, if the brothers say to Yosef, okay, you're going to pay us back for what we did to you, so then what exactly should the payback be? Let's take a look in the... Correct. So let's take a look at the Balaturim. Source number 10. Lu yistameni Yosef. Kishachazru milikvor et avihim, avay Yosef elabor sheshlichuhu bo, ubirech pederech baruch shesali nes b'makom hazeh. When they passed by the pit that he was thrown into, Yosef said, you know, blessed is God who did me a miracle in this place. Amur dainu zocher bilibo mashasinu lo. And they say, uh-oh, he still remembers what we did. And he quotes the Tanchuma. Maybe we'll see the Tanchuma in a moment. Yesh mefershim, some explain, lu yistameni Yosef, klomar, halavai yistameni Yosef, if only Yosef were to hate us. Bilibo, v'lo yaselenu ma'aseh, but not, meaning let him hate us in his heart, but not really do an action. V'im chafetz lasot lanu, but if he does want to do an action to us, yeshiv lanu kol hara'asheg malanu, that he should do to us all of the bad that we did to him, kimasinu lo, what did we do to him? Garamnu lo, shenesamelech, we caused him to become royalty. Machmat shemicharanuhu, v'nit galgelo davar, because we sold him, that's what emerged from it. V'nasamelech b'mitzrayim, and he became the leader in Egypt. Ken yaselanu, so he should do exactly the same thing. Which, by the way, the irony over here, as I said, it could very well be, that's exactly what Yosef is thinking when he goes by the pit and takes a look at the pit, and he says, wow, this is the place that everything turned around. They get scared, right? But then they say, hold it. If you're going to pay us back exactly what we did to you. And his response is, let God pay you back. Which means, even according to this interpretation, let God pay you back. Which means, if God wants to raise you up and make you important, that's up for God to do this. And this is not my job. This is not my job to do. I'll take care of you, but I am not going to turn you into something which is great, which I'm saying is, again, is just completely inverse of everything that we thought as we read it the first time.
I have a problem with this.
You're allowed to.
Okay, because Kavanah matters, mm-hmm. and it was not the brother's intention to do good things.
Right.
This was in God's hands.
Right. But still, from there, but still, their response. If you were the brothers, one second. This point is very true, because if you were the brothers and you would look at Yosef and he says, "I'm going to get you back," and you say, "For what? Look what we did to you." And to know what you were thinking of doing to us. No, but look what happened. Look at the way it worked out. It's interesting.
Well, Yosef also said that it was God.
Right. Exactly. I'm saying that's the way that it comes out. Then according to the Balaturim, okay. You want it all to work out good, so let God do it. The Tanchuma itself is in source 26. V'yiruach Yosef kimeit avim, ma'ru'u atah shepachadu, ela sh'ru'u ba'et shechazru mikvorot avim, ra'u shalach Yosef livarech al oto habor. He went, he went there on purpose to say the bracha. That's why he went there. He went there to thank God. He went, which means according to this, he went out of his way deliberately. He's back in Israel, and now he wants to go to the place that his life turned around. He says a person is obligated to make a bracha in a place. And the just 1 second. The Tanchuma then continues. The brothers are scared and said he's going to pay us back. And listen to the words of the Tanchuma. In the last two lines, Chipasnu v'lo matzanu shetziva Yaakov davar zeh. I've looked around and never found it written in the text itself. Elabav ra'e kama gadol koach ha-shalom shekatav HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'torato al koach ha-shalom elu advarim. That God is willing to report, to allow something to be written in the Torah, which is not true, in order to create peace. This is similarly in 27, in the Tanchum again, in Parshat Tzav, Om Shem Gamliel, Gadol Hu HaShalom, great is peace, Shekativ HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Dvarim B'Torah, Shelo Hayu, Ela B'Shvil Shalom. God allowed something to be written in the Torah which was not true. Elu hein kishemet Yaakov ra'u et achi Yosef kimet aviyem v'yom ulif temeni Yosef me'asu achu etzel bilha v'amrulo he can see etzel Yosef. They went to Bilha and said, go to Yosef. V'amurlo avicha tziva lefnei moto, that she knows what Yaakov had said. Okay, but it's not true. Kol tumur li Yosef anason hapesh achecha umilam lo tziva Yaakov miko elu dvarim klum. And Yaakov had never said it. Elam atzmamum dvarze, they made it up themselves. Amar shimim gamliel kama dio mishtapech v'kama kulmasin mishtabrim, how much ink has been wasted, how many quills have been broken, v'kama orot avudim, and how many skins, parchment, have been wasted, v'kama tinokim mitrabtsim lomod davar, and how many children are being forced to learn something, shelo haya b'tara, that never happened. I mean, saying what a fascinating perspective and way of reading it. But it's saying no, it never happened. And why is it written? Why is it written nonetheless? In order to create peace. Again, that is really a powerful statement. In 28, the Ketav Sofer comes and says again, don't let us be slaves. Don't kill us. And also, okay. 29 also similar. In 30, the Avrei Nachal, which now we're already moving towards Hasidic commentary. The Kol Yivu'al Amor Deruven Haya Misupak Im Yosef Hu Hazakai Neged Echav O Hu Hachayav Alot Sa'ot Diba. The Reuven was looking at the situation. You know, there's a famous story that there was once a din Torah. There was a lawsuit between the Netziv and between Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Rav Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, who would run the yeshiva of Lashon. It was a din Torah. Who would run the yeshiva and how it would be run? And they were both related family. They both had claims to the yeshiva, but one was more deeper study, and one was more study, like more material, covering more ground, but less deep, or less more deep and less ground. And there was an argument about how the yeshiva would be run. And they invited a number of people, but the Darshan from Vilna came in, and he was one of the people. So they asked him to say Dvar Torah before they begin. So what was his Dvar Torah? He says, when I read through Bereshit, you get to arguments between Avram and Lot, and you know who the good guy is. Avram and Yishmael, you know who the good guy is. Yitzchak, Avimelech, you know who the good guy is. Avram and Parah, you know who the good guy is. You get to Yaakov and Esav, you know who the good guy is. You get to Yaakov and Lavan, you know who the good guy is. He goes, well, then you get to Yosef and the brothers, and he goes, and now I don't know. That's how he started the Din Torah. He goes, I don't know. I just don't know which is the right side and which is the wrong side over here. Reuven, in the words of the Arve Nachal, is doing something very similar. He says, I don't know who's right. Is Yosef right or the brothers right? I mean, is Yosef really guilty over here of doing terrible things? Now, of course, you can argue, no matter how guilty Yosef was, he wasn't that guilty. Nonetheless, Arvid Nachal says, Reuven himself is confused. So what does he do? And therefore he says, okay, let's test it. This is sort of like the witch, you know, the witches in Salem, right? Let's see if he floats or not. And therefore he throws them in. He does use this thought later on in terms of the brothers in a very similar kind of thing. So, you know, let's, which means Yosef, it's not just that something happened. The whole thing is miraculous. Yosef's whole thing. So even the brother's response, okay, then do something great to us. It doesn't just sort of somebody did Yosef a favor. Yosef, his assuming the position that he assumes is really based upon something which is completely miraculous. In source 31 as well, that's Ferish Shlomo, again, Shlomo from Radansk, he also goes into this point how the brothers were completely humiliated because of Yosef treating them nicely and you know, found that very, very difficult. I want to get to one last point. If we go back into the text, in source number one, the final verse says, Vayeshev Yaakov b'mitzrayim. Sorry, Vayeshev Yosef b'mitzrayim. Hu uves aviv. Yosef settles in Egypt. Now, it's interesting because we already had Yosef returning to Mitzrayim. We have Vayeshev Yosef b'mitzrayim. Yosef returns. Here it's Vayeshev. What does Vayeshev mean? Right, so over here it's settled. There he returned, that's when they get scared. But this is really the conclusion. Vayeshev Yosef Mitzrayim. Now, before it had said, Vayeshev Yosef Mitzrayim, hu ve'echav. And that's where we saw the Al-Sheikh already raising this point that maybe there's a separation over here. When we get to Yosef, over here it says, Vayeshev Yosef b'Mitzrayim, hu uves aviv. Now, how do you read that? Are they separate or are they together? At this point, it sounds that they're together. I actually found, just don't see it right now. Just look very quickly. See it right now. I did come across a commentary that stressed that. Is it 22? Yes. The Malbim in 22. On that verse, writes Vayeshev Yosef. He writes, Misaper. This is the conclusion. Here, Jane wanted her resolution and. Know how the story ends. The Malbim claims, Misaper, Shalom Yosef hitmid kol yimei chayav, im shalom malchuto, ki yashav b'mitzrayim, im shalom mishpachto, ki yashav hu ubeit aviv, vaya ahava v'achva b'neihem. And they lived happily ever after. Halavai.